I'm Lee Blue, and this is Double Stack, where WordPress freelancers discover the tech stack and the business development stack to become high-value, sought-after WordPress consultants. So if you're tired of burning yourself out with those high-stress, low-budget projects, and you're ready to start working with clients you love at the rates you're really worth, then you're in the right place. All of this is 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast. Why do clients who pay the least expect you to work the most? That's what we're going to be talking about today. And we're going to dive into how you can attract better clients and how you can be affordable without attracting cheap clients who make you feel like quitting. So to figure all of that out, we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to go over what a cheap client actually is. Like, what do I mean when I say cheap clients? And then the way that we're going to go about avoiding them, we're going to talk about really putting some standards in place for what does your ideal client look like and who do you not want to work with. And then we're going to wrap things up by figuring out how can you be affordable without attracting cheap clients. So let's go ahead and dive into it right now. So when I talk about cheap clients, what I'm talking about are clients who don't really even know what they want, and they are looking for someone who is willing to work for as cheap as possible. And oftentimes they tend to be the ones that are nitpicky, never satisfied. You try to get back in touch with them and they're not there. They're just a nightmare to work with. And it just seems like it's always the case that the clients who are willing to pay the less always want you to work the most. And one of the reasons for this is these types of clients tend to be the ones that are in over their heads. In other words, you know, they have a business doing something other than online marketing or digital marketing or web development, and yet they still say, hey, you know what? Wouldn't it be great if we had a website and, you know, here's how it should look and here's what it should do. And so they try to go outside of their realm of expertise and then try to just find somebody who's going to implement these ideas that they have. And the issue with that, of course, is they constantly change their minds. And oftentimes what they want the developers to do is, you know, implement what they have in their mind now just so they can kind of see it. And then once they see it, then they'll know what they really want. And, you know, then, you know, you're undoing things and redoing things and changing things to actually make them worse. And it's just such a frustrating experience. It's totally inefficient. And it's really, it just makes you want to quit doing this kind of work when you have these kinds of crazy clients to deal with. And so what can we do to kind of get away from this? And one of the problems is that the mindset that these clients have is completely off base, and it's soaked in this false scarcity, and there's all this frantic panic oftentimes, which tends to lead to really, really gross kinds of relationships between the developer and the client. And so how can we avoid all of this? What can we do to get away from it? How can we stop attracting clients like this and start attracting the clients that you really want to work with and clients who actually see the value in what you're offering and are willing to pay the rates that you need? And so the way that I suggest doing that is by really putting some thought into your standards. Like, what kind of standards are you going to put in place so that you are actively pursuing clients that you like and you can spot a toxic client, you know, before you end up engaging in some sort of a project with them? So the way I do that is I've got like five or six things, it looks like, that that I really look for when I am thinking through like who my ideal client is. So we're going to walk through the five steps that I take to figure out who my ideal clients are. And then after that, I've got a couple of other steps, about four different things that I look for to make sure it's actually a good fit. And I have these four characteristics that if a client has one of these four things, then I know that's someone I do not want to work with. And so what I figured we could do is I'll walk through the way I set my standards, and then you can do a very similar exercise for yourself. Now, some of the things will be a little bit different because everybody, you know, has different types of personalities and tends to, you know, like different kinds of things. But the idea being, if you set your standards up front, then you'll be able to have much more success with regard to pursuing the clients that you actually like and avoiding the ones that you don't. So what does your ideal client look like? And so right off the bat, I want to know if the person that I'm working with actually can do something for their clients that offers actual real value, like someone who can do something that makes a difference in people's lives. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a life-saving, I mean, it could be like recreational, it could be like a restaurant, you know, somebody who wants to just deliver an awesome dining experience, or, you know, it could be in health and fitness and nutrition or weight loss, or a yoga instructor who just really wants to do an awesome job, or a chiropractor, but it could be like a service provider too, like someone who just is really into lawn care and can just do an awesome job taking care of people's lawns, or keeping a heating and air conditioning system up and running, or a plumber or a carpenter, or even a dog trainer. Like, just as long as the service is, or the client that I'm looking to work with does something that actually matters and can benefit other people, and they're really good at doing it, and then I can really get behind and really want to help support their business. So kind of right off the bat, I look for someone who can do something valuable for their clients. And then the second thing that I look for is this potential client committed to their work? For example, someone who is serious about what they do and they're focused on doing it well. And so again, like, it doesn't necessarily matter what industry they're in, but it matters to me whether or not they're committed to it, or are they just kind of dabbling around and experimenting with things, and you know, who knows if they're really going to stick with it or not. So I really want to make sure that this is someone who wants to be the best at what they do. They're really committed and are pursuing all of what they're doing with integrity, and they're just trying to do a great job. So thing number two is people who are committed to their work. Now, the third trait that I'm looking for is what I call people who are coachable. Someone who is willing to accept instruction. I mean, how many times have you had a client who just tells you things and you know that every time they make a recommendation, it's actually a change for the worse. And so despite what you say, they just won't hear it. And now you're working with this really uncoachable client. And so I just always find that to be so frustrating. And so one of the, you know, the third thing that I look for is, like, is this client going to be coachable? Is it someone who realizes that their way isn't really working at the level they want, or maybe they don't know what they want and they're really looking for someone who has experience to guide them? So people who are coachable, that's like the third thing that I really look for. The fourth thing is, you know, is the client dependable? Like, do they follow through? So if I ask them to do something, are they going to get it done, or am I just going to be sitting around forever waiting for some kind of a reply? And I always find that to be really vexing when that happens. So, you know, I want someone who's dependable. So if I ask them for, you know, to deliver a photograph, or I need a password for something, or, you know, whatever it might be, I want to make sure that they follow through. Or and I don't want to argue with people in order to get them to take action. And so I want this to be a collaborative teamwork experience. And so I want to make sure that the person that I'm working with is dependable and follows through. And then the next one is, you know, the last one, the fifth thing is, I want people that have a problem that I can actually solve. And this is one of those things that you really don't want to overlook this, because, you know, why make an offer if you don't feel confident that you can solve the problems that they have? And why make an offer if you don't even know what the problems are that they have that you're trying to solve? So the question that I would ask would be, can I do anything to make an impact on their business? And sometimes the answer could potentially be no. And if the answer is no, then it's not really going to be a client worth pursuing. On the other hand, if I know that I have stuff that's going to make a big impact and make a big difference and drive some awesome outcomes for them, then that's the kind of client I really like to work with. And so, do they have a problem that's worth investing time to solve? So is there a business problem that they're trying to fix? Or are they just looking for someone who just is going to implement something? For example, you know, is it just going to be a client that says, hey, I don't want you to, you know, link up my website to MailChimp and, you know, and that's all I need you for? If that's all they need someone for, then I don't want that kind of a client. I don't want that kind of a job. I want to be able to connect with clients where we're working together on an ongoing basis and I am driving value into their business because of the things that I'm doing online. And so that's kind of it. So do the people that I'm working with, is there a problem that I can solve, and are they open to working together in that way? So those are kind of the five things. So just to kind of recap real quick, you know, does the client offer something valuable to their clients? Are they committed to their work? Are they coachable? Are they dependable, and do they follow through? And do they actually have a problem that I can solve that's worth investing time in? And if the answer is yes to all of those things, then this is what I would consider to be an ideal client for me. Now, you might have some other criteria. You might have some other things that you're really looking for in your clients. And so the idea here is to just go ahead and proactively, like upfront, think through what your standards are and stick to them. And what you'll find is you'll be automatically filtering out the toxic clients, and you'll be attracting the ones that you really like and that you really want to be working with. And so the other side of the coin is, who do you not want to work with? Are there any particular traits or characteristics that a client might have that is something that just kind of spoils the whole thing, that you just want to avoid at all costs? And so for me, yes, there are. There's about four of them. And the first one is, you know, people who are trying to take shortcuts, like people that just want to make a quick buck, and they don't really, you know, provide any value or deliver any results for their clients. They're really just in it to try to make money for themselves. And I find that to be I just can't stand that type of an attitude. And so working for someone like that and trying to implement, you know, something online to help them do something like that is just incredibly frustrating, and I want to avoid that at all costs. So, for example, I remember I had a client come up to me, and he said, "Hey, Lee, do you know that like when somebody registers their business, like when you register like your LLC, you know, with the state, that did you know that those records are actually public, and that you know that you could actually scan what those business names are?" And I said, "No, you know, I didn't really know that." And he says, "Well, you can. And so what you can do is, why don't we do this? Why don't we go ahead and can you set up something to scan the names of people's businesses? And then what I'll do is I'll go and set, you know, we'll go and reserve the domain names that are related to the business names that were just registered." And so then, you know, the idea being that, you know, somebody, you know, kind of gets all wrapped up in their business, they get an LLC, and they're kind of filing it with the state and everything, and they forget to reserve their actual domain name at, you know, businessname.com or whatever. And this guy was saying, "Hey, why don't we go ahead and kind of sneak it by and like reserve their domain names before they get a chance to, and then say, hey, you know, here," and then like sell them the domain name at thousands of dollars or whatever, because now they're stuck, right? Because now they've already, you know, gone to the trouble to, you know, file the name with the state. And so they're going to be, you know, pay a premium or whatever for the domain name. And so like, you're just hearing the guy tell me this story of this ridiculous business idea made me, I just completely turned me off. I immediately knew that was not something that I wanted to be anywhere involved in at any level at any time. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm talking about. It's like, is the person that I'm getting ready to work with, are they taking shortcuts? Are they trying to help, or are they doing something kind of sneaky and just kind of mean like that? And so that's really kind of my first question that I kind of have to kind of get answered before I move forward. And then the second thing is, you know, what about that whole hurry up and wait attitude? You know, what about the clients who are like, you know, do this, hurry up, come on. And then you do it and you're expecting them to, you know, check out what you've done, and then, you know, you can't get a hold of them. And so, I mean, I hate that. It's so frustrating because, you know, it's high stress on you. And then, you know, you work as hard as you can, and then you get, you know, get ready to show them what you've done. And then, of course, there's no, you know, pressure on their side. You know, they just get around to it when they can. So it's like that whole hurry up and wait thing just is so frustrating. And so, people who want you to get everything done immediately, but then they get distracted chasing the next shiny thing. And it's, you know, how frustrating is that? I want to avoid people who are just dabbling and poking around, and I don't want to be more committed to their business than they are. And so, you know, that's kind of what I define as like the hurry up and wait attitude. Like, you know, people put, put this huge amount of urgency on you to kind of implement something or do something really fast. And you think, okay, well, I'll do the best I can. And then they don't show you that same kind of courtesy. And, you know, they're just not even there. You know, they don't have any urgency and they're just kind of stringing you along. So, you know, that whole hurry up to wait attitude, I don't like it. I can't stand it. And when a client has that kind of attitude, it's definitely a no deal there. So that's the second thing. The third thing is the know-it-all client, right? So this is kind of the opposite of the coachable client. This is the kind of client who, you know, it doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter what your experience is. They just say, you know, what they want, and that's pretty much the bottom line. And they run their business and feel like they should be running mine too. You know, that's kind of the concept. And so, so you make a recommendation based on years of experience and education and everything that matters, and they don't care. They don't even listen. They want it's their way or nothing. And so, you know, they just want someone to do what they say, and that's it. The know-it-all client. That's a deal breaker. That's someone I don't want to work with. And then the fourth thing is, are you always waiting on them to reply? Are they missing meetings? Are they late to things? Are, you know, you ask a question and then you just, you know, crickets, you know, nothing. And, there's something that you need and they just go missing, or people who, you know, just miss appointments, they need to reschedule. You know, that kind of attitude is so vexing. And so those are kind of the four things, you know, to kind of recap there, you know, people are trying to take shortcuts and don't actually provide any value. And you're just trying to, you know, be mean with their business, whatever, you know, if that's, you know, right off the bat, a total deal breaker. That hurry up and wait attitude, you know, the know-it-all client, and, you know, people get just kind of always waiting on other people to reply, like people that just don't, you know, that aren't punctual. They don't keep their appointments. They're just kind of, they don't really show any commitment, you know, that always waiting on them to reply kind of attitude. So what we've done here is we've kind of gone through, you know, what does your ideal client look like and what does your ideal client not look like? And so when you set standards like that up front, then you're able to do two things. You're able to pursue clients that actually look like your ideal clients because you know what you're looking for up front, and you're able to avoid toxic clients. I mean, you know, you can kind of, you know, get the idea really quickly once you set these standards. And if you begin to get a hint that, you know, one of these things that, you know, that you know that you're not looking for, if that begins to surface in a conversation when you're talking to like a lead or a prospect, then you can say, hey, you know, you just redirect them to some other resource other than you. And then that's how you can avoid these cheap clients that are stressful and just make you want to quit your job. So that's kind of the idea. We've talked about cheap clients, what good clients look like, what bad clients look like. And then the idea here is to be intentional and selective with your clients. You don't have to accept every single client. And when you do, like if you decide that you're going to take on a client, even though you know that they're going to be a toxic client, then you're going to end up paying for it one way or another. But when you're intentional and you're selecting, like you're actually putting effort into pursuing the actual clients you want to be working with, then you can avoid cheap clients by staying true to your standards. And so, you know, set a bar and then stick to it. So one other thing though is if you find that you're working with a client and they don't actually have the budget for what you're offering, but yet they seem like they're not hitting any of those things that make you say, hey, that's a bad client. And they are putting checks next to the things that make you think they are a good client. It could very well just be they absolutely just don't have the budget for the full project that you're going to be recommending. And so, you know, so you kind of think this thing through and you say, are they committed? Are they committed to being the best at what they're doing? Or are they just dabbling? Do they think they know what they want? And now they're just needing a cheap worker, you know, so that kind of like a negative thing, you know, kind of that know-it-all kind of client that's not coachable. And do they have a problem that's even worth your time? So like if you're going through those questions and you're finding that the answers are favorable and that you actually have come across a good client, but they just don't have the full budget, Then the idea here is like, how can you be affordable? Like, what can you do to structure your services in a way that your clients that you want to work with can afford them, but yet you're not attracting cheap clients? And so maybe they're not trying to be cheap. They just legitimately can't afford your offer. And so therefore, now you can be creative and think of ways that you can actually make your services affordable and grow over time. And there's really two fundamental different approaches to how you can do it. Both, you know, and you can just choose, you know, which approach works best on a case-by-case basis. And we'll go over both of them real quick right now. So, you know, so what we're saying here, just to kind of, you know, be clear, is that the client that we're working with does in fact meet your standards. So, you know, you're not just lowering your price just for the sake of, you know, attracting cheap clients. What you're doing is you're finding clients that you want to work with, and then you're structuring your services in a way that puts them within reach for that client. And the idea is to build a path, making each stepping stone within reach. So like, if you can't get all the way from start to finish in one huge jump, then can't you build a path with stepping stones where each stepping stone is within reach for your client? And so then you have to figure out, okay, well, what does that look like? What would a stepping stone be? Like, how do you do that? And the two ways that I would recommend that you consider doing it, way number one is what everybody calls ascending the value ladder. And what that means is, you know, the first step is the stuff that's, you know, the most critical, the most essential, but also the you know, has a relatively small scope to it, so that you can, you know, just do the most important things first. In other words, you know, you can structure your offer. Like, if you have a lot of stuff that you want to offer to your client, you can say, well, here's the critical stuff, and then after that we'll do the next level, and then finally perhaps even a third level on top of that. Basically, what I'm talking about is, like, you know, a good, a better, and a best option. Or a step one, step two, step three, or phase one, phase two, phase three, where phase one is, you know, is the stuff that, you know, if you could only pick one thing to do out of the big list, this is the main thing. And then once that's done, and then results start coming in because you did that thing, then, you know, you move on to the next one, and then the next one. And then over time, you know, over the next couple of months or whatever, as their business grows and as their revenue grows and as they're seeing results from what you've done, then they can afford to do more things. And so that's kind of, you know, step by step going up the value ladder. The second idea is a little bit more radical, perhaps you might say, a little bit different and a little bit unusual. And so what I always suggest that you do is, in addition to building out an online presence, it's really critical to set up monthly retainers with your clients. And the reason for that, and we've talked about that a bunch before, but the main reason for those retainers is because that's really where the value is. That's where the value is for you, and it's where the value is for your client as well. Because if you just build out an online presence, it can be the best website there ever was, but if nobody is there continuing to put fuel in the tank, it's not going to go anywhere. And so somebody has to be there on that month-to-month basis to continue to keep the ball rolling. And that somebody should be you, because your client doesn't know how to do that stuff. They don't have the time to do that stuff. They don't want to learn how to do that stuff. They really need an expert. And that's why they need you to be there on that month-to-month basis, doing things that drive business outcomes, not just plugin updates, not just WordPress hosting and backups and whatever, but the things that actually matter for their business, that get more clients in, that get more leads in, that convert leads to customers, you know, those types of things. You know, effort needs to be put into that stuff. And there's tons of things you can do online for those things. And that's what you need to be putting in those monthly retainers. And so basically now what you have is you have two things. You have that initial build out of the website, and then you also have the monthly retainer. And so what we just talked about was that value ladder, where maybe that initial build out of the website has a lot to it, and you just do a piece at a time as the client can afford it. Well, the other idea is, hey, okay, well, if we've got these two things, if we've got the initial build out and then we've got the retainer, well, what if we just did the retainer part first? Right? So, like, what if we just use the site they already have? Or, you know, maybe there's things in the retainer that don't necessarily mean they have to have a brand new site. You know, maybe you can help them build an email list, or maybe you can help them deal with social media or whatever it might be. You know, maybe you can help them do that before you actually do the big build out. And so, so that's what I call the retainer first idea, where you do the things on that month to month basis for, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month, you know, nothing huge. And then, And then as, you know, as results start coming in from that and they start building an email list and start doing better with that kind of stuff, then, you know, then maybe do a landing page, and then maybe a landing page moves into, okay, now we're going to update the whole site. And then now that moves into the next thing. And so if you do that retainer first approach, then you're going to be there month to month helping the client on an ongoing basis. And then once the opportunity presents itself to do the big overhaul, then you can do that perhaps later on. So those are two different approaches to how you can make your services affordable without attracting cheap clients. And because, of course, the alternative would be, hey, you know, you just start lowering the price and lowering the price and lowering the price until the client eventually says yes. And then you just end up doing all the things for the lower price. And that's generally the path that people go down when these cheap clients get into the mix. And so what I'm suggesting is avoiding that by making sure first that you have your standards in place where you are, you're looking for the clients that you want. You know how to avoid the clients that annoy you. And then once you find an ideal client, then being reasonable and easy to work with by being open to restructuring the way that you deliver your services, either in that value ladder approach or in that retainer first concept. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you guys about today. And you know, the big idea about how you can be affordable without attracting cheap clients. So if this is the kind of stuff that you want to talk more about, so for example, like if you're thinking, yeah, this sounds great, I don't really understand that retainer first approach very well. They're like, what do I put in that retainer? Like, how can I actually structure that? How do I present that to my clients? Like, how do I sell that? Well, that's the kind of stuff that we can talk about one-on-one, because it really depends on what industry they're in, what kind of market that you're really going for, what kind of prices that you need to be charging, what kind of skills that you have. You know, different people have different sorts of skills. And so what we can do is we can get on the phone for 45 minutes and you can tell me about, you know, the skills that you have, the people that you want to be working with. You know, tell me what your standards are for your clients. And then we can then structure business development packages that we can put together so that you can then start onboarding clients on that month-to-month basis, like so you don't have to constantly search for new clients all the time. And the idea being that, you know, once you get, you know, maybe 5, 10, maybe 15 total clients, then you've got a portfolio now that's awesome, and you don't have to go out and find new clients all the time. You just keep working with those, you know, 5, 10, or 15 clients on an ongoing basis. And what you'll find is, like just say, for example, you had a $1,000 per month retainer with 10 different clients. Well, now you're making 10 grand a month. That's 120 grand a year. And so, you know, that seems to be awesome. So if that's the kind of structure that you want, so you don't have to constantly hunt for clients and you're actually there to provide the benefits and drive the results that they're looking for because you're not abandoning them when you launch the site, that's the kind of stuff we can talk about. How can you structure your business that way? You know, what kind of tech tools can you implement? You know, what combination of those tools can you put together into these business development packages so that you're not just offering WordPress care plans, because nobody wants to buy WordPress care plans. So all that is to say, if you want to talk about that kind of stuff, head over to doublestack.net/call. And that's where you're going to find my personal calendar. And you can pick a time that works well for you. And then after you pick a time, you're going to see a little form where you fill out a couple of questions, you know, give me a link to your website, tell me a little bit more about your business. So when we get on the phone, we can really dive into it and get some of these answers to these questions about how you can restructure your business so that you're not burning yourself out working with cheap clients who just want to, you know, work you to the bone. And instead, you're working with clients that you love and you're getting paid the rates that you need and that you deserve for the results that you're delivering. So, head over to doublestack.net/call and pick a time. And I really look forward to talking to you about those types of things. So awesome. Great. Thanks for showing up. And I look forward to talking to you guys again soon.